Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
And welcome to the Fat Lot of Good podcast. I'm Helen Thorne. I'm a comedian. I'm an author and owner of a fat body. I am giving you today one of the most fabulous women I've ever had the pleasure of meeting. It is, of course, Alexandra Hemingsley. Hello, Alexandra.
Hi.
Does that sound too mumsy?
Yes, I feel like I'm okay. Very close to being sent to my
Alexandra.
room. Alex or Hemo, because Hemo was my nickname before social media handles.
Yes.
It was because I had a boyfriend a long time ago who had a sports journalist flatmate who called me Hemo because I was so bad at sports.
Oh, there you go. Not anymore, listener. Not anymore. It is an absolute pleasure to have you here.
Thank you for having
me. I'm a huge fan of your books, your Instagram. Let me just say your hair. Let's just say that you've got great hair. You're missing out. This is only audio. Thank you so much for joining us. Why don't you just introduce yourself? Tell us all about you. Who are you, Alexandra Hemo?
Well, I am an author and a journalist. I've sort of came up through publishing and book reviewing. And then my career about 5 or 6 years ago took a strange turn when I started writing books about sport, specifically about me doing sport. So back in the days when all running books were either pink and like how to get a bikini body, how to run yourself hot for summer, or were really hardcore narrative nonfiction, male sort of, it was day 19 in the desert and his trainers had worn away and he was running on bare stumps. Then I was like, oh, can I write a book just about like running being quite good fun? And it turned out I could. So yes, I did Running Like a Girl. And then I did Leap In, and I wrote a sort of crazed fan letter to Judy Murray a few years ago and said, I think you've got an amazing story and you look at sport differently from most other women, especially women in profession. And so then she wrote back to me 2 years later and I wrote her book with her. So as well as sort of working in and around publishing, I now do a lot of sort of stuff about sport and women in sport and body image and the sort of point where they all connect.
Well, that's been the absolute joy of your book, but also I guess the move away from only thin people owning sport or being allowed to do sport or the rest of us, people. Yeah, exactly.
I did believe that it was like a gene thing, that you were born with the ability to go for a run or not. And it took till I was in my 30s to understand that it was, I was still allowed to make that decision, that it wasn't like something that had been put on a form when I was maybe 13 and I had to stick to indefinitely, that I was able to go, oh no, I'm going to change that now. And that was just a huge deal for me when I understood that.
And so let's go to your first book, which is about running, which I love.
Yeah.
What made you get into running that first time?
Well, yeah, my dad had done all this running when we were children, and he did it. He was one of those sort of original marathoners from the sort of early 80s onwards, like the short shorts and the vest top and like just sort of proper 118 man kind of fashions.
Doesn't but leave a lot to the imagination about what's going on.
No,
underneath.
I mean, there are some old pictures of him running that I have really, when the book came out and they'd be like, and do you have any pictures of your father, and I'd be like, well, I've got a picture, but it is a lot of my father that you're going to get there.
Headshot's fine. Headshot's fine.
just, yeah, I mean, you can tell he's wearing a vest from the shoulders, right? Anyway, yeah, he was, but in a way that you can only be when you're a slightly self-absorbed teenage girl, what my dad was doing early on a Sunday morning was of no interest to me.
Yeah.
And my first book, he very kindly referred to Running Like a Girl as my first book then, but my actual first book came out about 13 years ago and it was called X in the City. And it was
I'm so sorry, I'm very under-researched.
No. Oh, no, it's not under-researched.
Your
it's
first
me
sports
carefully,
book, I said,
no,
I think
it's me
fine.
Carefully manicuring my history. Because it was called X in the City and it was about being dumped. And it came out the week that my sister got married in Italy. And my sister is 4 years younger than me. And my publishers rang me up and were like, oh, my God, amazing news. It's going to be on sale in the Smiths at all the airports. And I was like, oh, my God, this is so great. You know, you, as an author, you really want your book to be on sale in places like this. But what happened was that my sister's wedding was actually really humiliating for me because as the older sister at her amazing Disney wedding, everyone was like, hey, I saw your book about all your heartache at the airport.
Oh, my God. Because
obviously
oh my God.
Everyone had seen it on the table at the front, which is normally an author's dream.
Yes, all publicity is good publicity.
And then I had my first book and nothing else had happened to me and I didn't know what else I was going to do and I was newly gone freelance and I just was like this, I just got so depressed. And then my brother said to me that he was wanted to do the London Marathon and I can remember it so clearly because it was on my folks' house in the countryside and I said, oh, I wish I could run. And my dad was getting a coffee cup out of one of those corner cupboards in a kitchen and so his head was kind of right in the cupboard so he'd open the door and he said, it's not that you can't run, it's that you don't. And because of where his head was, it was like,
it's not that you can't,
like Morgan Freeman voice. And I sort of realized that maybe it was still within my sphere of responsibility. So I trained for that first London Marathon and it really genuinely was a life-changing experience.
Yeah.
And it taught me about so much about my body and confidence and grit. Like to do a marathon, you have to just keep training for like months.
And it's long. It's a long, lots of hours. I mean, I'm training for a 10K at the moment. And just even doing 10Ks is like an hour and a half.
Yeah.
And that's a long chunk of time. And I've got two kids and like, sorry, darling, I'm off for 2 hours. I'll be back soon. And just to out of your life.
Yeah.
There's my husband does triathlons and you described him so well in Leap In. There's this bit where you describe very expensive wetsuits, all the kit, all the things. And I've gone to watch him do triathlons and they're so fucking serious. And what was really lovely about both your running book and your swimming book is that just the joy that you get from it. It wasn't like, and then I got this really good time and it was all about my technique. I mean, you do talk about technique, but it's not solely about that. There's a real shift of
technique,
focus.
It for me is a way to just make it easier to not feel pain rather than to be the victor.
No, that was great. And so if someone, like, if there's a listener who's, I guess, run curious, who might be like us, well endowed in the breasts or you know, not a size 10. I mean, what sort of advice do you give to people sort of starting off?
Well, doing events and hearing from people has really taught me that what a lot of people think running is for 10 minutes, half an hour, 3 hours, however long it takes you to do a marathon, of the feeling that you have during the first 4 minutes of your first ever run, which is without doubt the worst few minutes of your entire running life. And it will never really get much worse than that. But people think that you're experiencing that just like for these indefinite periods when you... And it is astonishing how quickly, if you stick to it, you do get fitter and more used to it. It's ridiculous. When you realise how much the odds are stacked in your favour, you feel like kind of deranged that you didn't do it sooner. But it changes so quickly, and warming up is a thing. It's not just something when they were like making fitness DVDs and they wanted to make them a bit longer or or something
they
to like use up a bit of a
gratuitous arse shorts as they bent over. No.
Which I really did think they were. But that feeling when you're the kind of do-do-do-do-do-do of your feet, not that fast, obviously, of your feet and your heartbeat, sort of when they sort of tether and you get into a rhythm and your podcast or your music or whatever and the sun comes out from behind a cloud, that is nothing like the horrible feeling when you're on your first or second run and you're trying to run like a Penelope pit stop person. And so all running is not that feeling. And I think, and what I've learned is that a lot of people go for one run and think, absolutely no way. I couldn't do that for 5 kilometres. Get out.
I am out. I know, I don't, I felt, because I'm a big lady. And I just remember the first time I did that, the couch to five, I just felt like everything was heaving up and down. I could feel every heartbeat and, you know, feel, I just felt, and it took, you know, 3 weeks, 6 weeks or something. And then one day I just was running and I forgot that I was running. You know, that thing. And then I just felt like shouting to the entire park, I'm having a good time. Everyone should do this. This feels awesome. And like you'll see a flower, I'm like, that's the most beautiful flower I've ever seen.
And also, even what I have learned is that even when you feel big or if you feel big, it is different when you feel big but strong and muscly. When you feel like if you're going up a hill and you feel like there's power behind you, that your glutes are a thing to be reckoned with, rather than you're kind of just a bag of potatoes in a rucksack that you're living inside of.
That's right. I'm just carrying these potatoes, human potatoes around with me.
Even if on a scale or on a skirt size, you were the same, that change that happens from strength to just sort of, which is a word, I just don't know how to spell it.
No, we all know what you mean.
It's
really
profound. And very heartening. And that is when you start to make those steps towards size and weight being inconsequential.
Can we move from land to water now? Can we dip into the sea? Because it's really lovely reading, I had the audiobook, highly recommend it, about you running along the waterfront in Brighton for so many years and then finally dipping into the ocean. And so what made you want to, I guess, transfer that long distance running to long distance swimming?
Moving to Brighton as a runner was such a powerful part of me getting to know the city, and not just running along the seafront, but also when you run up in the Downs in Sussex, you can see the sea when you're up there, and it just sort of seemed increasingly daft that I wasn't getting in the water. And I really loved it as a child, and then the trouble was, having done Running Like a Girl, I had this powerful confidence of like, well, all you need to do is just give it a go. You're the master of your own domain and your body and possibly all the elements too. And I thought, well, I just, you know, I'd spent 3 years going to literary festivals and saying, well, all you need to do to run is to run. And everyone's sitting there and going, oh, wow, will you sign my book?
Jolly God, she's amazing.
What insight. And then I thought, well, all you need to do to swim must be to swim. So in I hopped.
Splash, splash, on you
went. Before realising that the water moves and goes in your face, in your lungs, and even if you're not doing anything, it can, like, send you off to France or into the big metal legs of the pier or all kinds of terrifying things. And to my horror, I understood that so many of my fears around running had really just been shame. It was like, it will be embarrassing if I fall over. It looks awful when my face is red. What if I come last in the marathon? But with swimming, if you just assume everything's going to be fine, there is a real chance of death. And that was quite an steep uptick in risk that I had unknowingly undertaken. And which was very timely and great, because then I started to have a really difficult time in my life, and understanding the, you know, really hippie-ish elemental things like the tides and the weather, and how there is so much in life that you just can't change, that when it's a good day and the sea is flat, you do just have to go, oh, I'm not going to do, you know, the boring ironing or whatever. I'm going to go, I've got to go now. I'm going to find a way to make me be able to get to the sea today. Or when you're really looking forward to a swim and then you get out there and like some random wind appears out of nowhere and you just can't, you have to just be like, well, that does sometimes happen.
Yeah.
And swimming is also incredibly kind. So where there's that jiggle when you're running, there's none of that. Swimming is the most equal place. It's repeatedly proven that women are the winners of long distance open water swimming because of their fat distribution making them stronger and better in the water. And the better your stroke is as a swimmer, the less weight you lose and less energy you expend, because you just become like a beautiful, efficient walrus.
Yeah. I'm putting that on a t-shirt. So, yeah. That's my life goal now. I want to be a beautiful, efficient walrus, Hemo. I do.
I feel like I should get that tattooed.
I think so. I'm going to make a swimming suit with that on it, with a walrus.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Wow!
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
And you have just announced that you're writing two books. That's not the right English. You are writing two new books. Can you tell us about your body book in particular?
Yes. Well, I'm doing one now called Somebody to Love, which is going to be more... It's going to have elements of memoir. Like, the loose structure is going to be about my life, but it's more broadly going to be about women's relationships with their bodies and how quickly and how easily we can kind of, in either just moments of the general drudgery of life, or in more extreme moments of trauma, just sort of distance yourself from your body, because you're living your best life when you have some sort of connection. And I'm not saying like when you are at your most fit, but when you're using your body to do things that you love, and when you're sort of feeling like you're working as a good team. And also, one of the things that I really learned with the first two books was a lot of it was about anxiety and bad body image and all of that. But what I really profoundly understood, partly from the process of speaking to readers of those books, and partly because my husband and my co-parent is now transitioning, which, to be a woman, not like to be a runner. And that has obviously been extremely eye-opening.
Yeah.
But of all the things that I felt in my life and my relationship with my body, I didn't feel threatened. I didn't feel that other people... I mean, actively would hate me or want to wish ill on me because of it. They might have judged it and they might have not understood it and they might have said mean things because of what was going on with their body. But I've sort of had this kind of, I mean, I hesitate to use the word radical because I mean, like, I'm wearing like a black jumper and I've got long blonde hair and I'm not really a radical person by instinct.
It doesn't have to be external. Like,
but I've had a radical new understanding of the fact that for whatever misery I've had because of my body, I haven't been in threat of going to prison because of it or exported from a country because of it, or I'm not fundamentally illegal because of it.
Yeah.
Or no one, I mean, someone might beat me up, but it's not that likely in the larger scale of sort of hate crime. I'm really low on the hate crime hit list compared even to the person that was my husband now.
Yeah.
And so quite a lot of, I mean, I don't want to call it whinging. That was in my first two books. But I can now see them in a really, really different context. And part of that is social media and people like Rachel Cargill and Yomi Adetigoki and all of the sort of voices that have bubbled up through Twitter and Instagram and partly through my now curious marriage.
Yes.
which is as a romantic coupling ended, but as a family unit, really positive and has been a huge learning experience.
Yeah, and it'd be great to, if you want to talk about more about how you want to, I guess, sort it out in your own head, but also how you're going to bring your son up and how you explain that to him as well.
Yeah, so this is the thing with Somebody to Love, is this sort of kind of reframing of what I had, like I was starting to feel, frankly, like a bit of a know-it-all about body image, and then I've had this kind of sudden like other screen pulled back and
here
it's like,
here's another challenge.
My body image is never gonna get me arrested for having been born. There are things that I've done to my body. So for example, IVF, which 20 or 30 years ago people were protesting about outside of parliament and outside of churches, and I want to be part of being one of those women that brings up the next generation of disenfranchised people. And a big part of that to me is teaching my son that the patriarchy is of limited use to him, to me, to my co-parent, to everyone he's going to meet pretty much.
One of the things I just thought was so extraordinary about your book was the duality between you learning to swim and conquering your body and IVF. And that was so beautifully written, harrowing and hard, but I'm sure for anybody reading the book would just find it just so comforting that you were so honest. And
I found it really hard because I'd done this big running and by the time I got married, I'd done 5 marathons and my book had been published in like 15 countries. And it was just sort of this unstoppable feeling of, if I want to do a thing, all I have to do is decide, and the barriers are but self-imposed, and I'm the master of my own body. All of which is true in that context, but then turned out really not to be true when it came to fertility. And so we were having IVF, and I found it totally spirit-crushing. Partly the weird distancing thing that happens when you take all these hormones, that I found it very difficult to understand what was a side effect and what was a genuine and valid emotion.
Yeah.
And also what was like just me getting older and not feeling like running so much because I was doing all this IVF, and what was the hormones. And so it was like completely discombobulating experience, and also just really distressing that this thing I'd spent 3 or 4 years basically preaching to everyone else suddenly seemed really untrue.
Yeah.
And the I suppose it was the sort of sense of acceptance that swimming gave me, that especially outdoor swimming, you know, having to adapt to your conditions and move your body according to the swell of a wave, and that's kind of amazing metaphor for life and it turns out parenthood of the sort of constant adaptability being a strength in itself. I went into IVF feeling really strongly, I felt like the only way that we could do it would be if I understood that if it didn't work out, I wasn't less valid as a person. Yeah. It couldn't be an open-ended mission that could only end with me having a child.
How would you describe your relationship with your body now? Now that you've been through all of that and going through, I guess, other things as well.
I'm really, really proud of it. And have to remind myself of that sometimes, because it has taken a bit of a bashing since the glory tour years of Running Like a Girl publicity. And consequently, there is still some clothing that doesn't fit. But it really makes me feel tough, in a positive way, not like a gnarly way. old boots. but I feel it sounds daft, but I feel ready to age now in a way that I didn't. Like I've done a lot of stuff with my body, so my main aim would be now to be able to enjoy it rather than to enjoy how it looks exclusively. Yeah. I mean, obviously we all want to look amazing all the time.
Oh yes, but... I mean, you all feel lovely in a nice frock, you know. I can go out, I can leave the house at any state now. Before, when I was younger, there'll be days I couldn't go out because I haven't got the right outfit, or I don't like my hair, or all those sort of things. And now, I just don't fucking care. It's like life is too short for that.
Yeah, I think it was Caitlin Moran who said the thing of, when women say, I don't know what to wear today, what they often really mean is, I don't know who to be today. Mm. And I've tried really hard to, since having the baby, to only buy clothes that I could, that aren't just comfortable but are sort of reflective of how I want to be out in the world.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't only want to wear uncomfortable clothes, but also I want to sort of stand up tall.
Yeah, no, and not hide. I think there's that thing called like the mum uniform, which I wore for the first 5 years of being a mum, which was a Breton stripe, some Next jeans and some Converse.
Yeah.
And I was quite happy in that, because I just like, well, this is who I am now. I am the mum, so I'm going to, and to coin the phrase, dress like a mum. And it's only been in the last couple of years, getting confidence from like sport and obviously comedy, that I was like, oh no, I can wear colour.
Yeah.
I can wear things that show off my boobs, even though my boobs are significantly lower than they were. You know, like all those sort of things have been a massive sort of change in how I see myself and how comfortable I am with other people seeing me.
Yeah, and I think people can be really down on Instagram, but it's really helped me to see all the other ideas of how to dress, because it is true, you're just like, But these jeans are elasticated. Why would I surrender them?
No.
I've gone to a middle ground where my old maternity jeans with the elastic waist are now my post-swimming jeans. So
lovely.
If I'm on the beach, they're very quick and easy to get on. So I just want you to know that I haven't surrendered them, but nor will I wear them to a meeting.
Oh. Now, I want to ask you, now we've spoken so beautifully about your body, what makes you feel sexy? What is the thing that makes you, or gets your strut on?
I like the feeling of having sweated. Sometimes it doesn't even have to have been exercise. Like the other day I had to sort out I had to sort out the sort of weird cupboard. I live in a sort of 1960s block of flats, and there's like a weird cupboard down in the car park where all my kind of plastic boxes of my accounts and I had to sort it out, and there was things I needed to find. I was looking for my teen diaries, actually, for somebody's love, and I spent like 3 hours like lifting heavy things, and my hair was all up and I was wearing scummy clothes, and I just felt great afterwards. Like I felt self-reliant, and I associate sweat now not with like, oh, I've got to give a presentation in this meeting, but with like a positive thing.
I've done something, I've achieved something.
And also shagging.
Nothing better
Having shagged does good, make me feel sexy.
Good shagging. Oh, that's a nice segue to my next question, which is, what's your most favourite thing to put in your body? Whether, I mean, it could be cock if you want it to. Sounds like you enjoy it, Hemo.
I mean, it's not realistic when there's cheese. I really thought about it.
Yeah.
And I would, at this point in my life, I have a son, I have, you know, many relationships behind me, I would think that well-chosen cheese is better.
Joy of joys, the joy of life. A cheese board is a wonderful thing.
I mean, I don't like to think that I'll never have sex again, but I've I just feel like if I couldn't have cheese again, that would be...
Oh, man, that's a whole other book.
Traumatic.
Seriously, don't even put yourself through that pain, Hemma. Yeah. You've been through enough.
Yeah.
don't deny yourself that, for fuck's sake.
The people who can't have cheese are the people whose plight I must move on to.
Very sad people. Very sad people. Can I ask you, please, what was your most embarrassing body moment? I mean, obviously, pissing in a wetsuit was a glorious moment. Not embarrassing at all.
I had one of my early marathon runs when I did really have like 2 hours into a run. I was like, yeah, I need a loo, and I'm really quite far from home, and all that is between me and home is quite a long stretch of Kilburn High Road, which was not the gastropub haven it is now in this pre-iPhone.
Yes.
Prehistoric times of which we speak. And I did just have to, it was like shitting on Kilburn High Road or going into a scary Irish pub and going, I'll pay for a drink when I come out, and just legging it past the bar and then sort of giving them a sheepish couple of quid for a Coca-Cola or something.
For a poo, basically. It was guilt poo money that you handed over. I've done that with kids, though, like when my kids need a poo, because you're son is thankfully still in nappies and gone into cafes going, I'll just buy a cupcake in a minute. And they go, the poo's coming now, Mummy, the poo's coming now.
I can feel it.
It's coming. Yeah. So yes, toddlers and runners abuse the toilet systems of local Irish pubs. Excellent. Now, on a sort of less jolly note, what is the worst thing that anybody has said about your body?
I think I can't be specific about it because generally I haven't heard it. So it's been that kind of...
Yeah.
As you kind of go past at a traffic lights or whatever. Yeah. And you could, or when you've got headphones on and you can just see the aggressive mouths moving or the van. Yeah, so I can't tell you the words, but I think it might have been... faster.
Yeah, nice. Come on, love. I like that one. Yeah.
Nearly there, fatty. Yeah. Or, yes, I am.
Seem to be moving a lot faster than you. Yes. Oh, well, fuck those guys. Fat facts. Did you know we every month to fill a bath?
Oh, I definitely do.
Absolutely. Sometimes I think I fill a bath in a day. And can I ask about the wee in the wetsuit? Is that is that a lovely thing?
It's the best.
Yeah.
The wetsuit itself doesn't keep you warm. Mm. What the wetsuit is so gross. I'm so ashamed.
No. This is
what
the best bit of the podcast.
What a wetsuit does is... The reason they feel so tight when you first put them on is that what they do is they trap a very thin layer of water between you and the wetsuit, which your body then heats up. So the water that your body has heated up is then an all-over hot water bottle for yourself. So you can save time and get things moving faster if you get in the water and wee. And then you've got lovely wee keeping you warm.
Like a little wee cuddle. A lovely cuddle of piss. Nice.
And I have a son who was always perfectly happy to sit with a wet nappy for ages. And now I know why. Because there he basically are. Had someone who was in a wetsuit. I'm so sorry.
No, that's delicious. I feel like I'm going to order a wetsuit now, and just for that sensation.
Just for watching Endeavour on a Sunday night.
Delicious. Excellent. Good.
The Hall of Fat Fame.
So I want for the Fat Lot of Good podcast to have a whole lot of women or people that inspire our guests. So who makes you feel fabulous?
I think Ashley Graham is incredible. And I get lost in her Instagram page, especially when she does posts of her exercising, because she's so fast and strong. And she's that big model in the States.
Oh, awesome.
She's really beautiful, but she is very stereotypically beautiful. Her face is, she looks like a sort of 1950s Greek goddess, but she's just big.
Yeah.
And Jessamine, the yoga teacher.
Oh, she's amazing. She's so bendy.
She's so bendy, and she is someone that I think is like genuinely radical, because she talks about her body in like a really sort of explicit way, not just sexually, but just like, she talks about that. She wrote something amazing last summer about like the feet, how radical it is to openly show people your thighs rubbing when you walk down the street, and things like that. That, you know, are whispered secrets for women in summertime, and especially pregnant women or women. The summer that Linus was born, I was in agony half the time. And yeah, that I find her. She's like exceptional. Whereas Ashley Graham is really beautiful, but she would be really beautiful. Whatever she did.
Yes, exactly right. Oh, well, we'll put those in the show notes.
Fatspiration.
What is your fatspiration? What is your mantra? What would you like splayed across Instagram to inspire your followers?
That you're allowed to take up space. I think a lot about fatness, or whatever your perception of fatness is to do with feeling like physically too big in a room or a meeting room or something. And I just don't think men are as preoccupied by that. And you're allowed to go into a room wearing a big puffy winter coat or whatever and sort of have people step back a little bit. It's not that hard for everyone to do that. And we've been doing it for men who are generally bigger than us anyway. It's okay to take up some space in the world.
Yeah. Well, Alexandra Hemmingsley, Hemmo, you've been a complete delight. Thank you for sharing your story, your body with us. And we cannot wait to read your book. Now, where can people find you on the internet?
I am Hemmograms on Instagram and Hemmo on Twitter.
And your website's
alexandrahemmingsley.com.
Fabulous. That's everything covered. You've been a wonderful listener. She's been a wonderful guest. Please rate, review and subscribe to Fat Lot of Good podcast. I've been Helen Thorne. The producer is Maddie Hickish, and the music for this podcast was supplied by John Thorne. Yes, it's my brother. Okay. Thanks everyone for listening. Goodbye.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.